there are strategies from more traditional or process systems engineering, such as design of optimally informative experiments. So in this case, it's the other way around. You use your models. These are dynamic processes that change over time. And the overall idea is you can use your computational models as long as you're confident in their robustness, the robustness of their structure, really. And you can use them to design optimally informative experiments.
Hey, smart scientists, welcome to another episode on the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast. We are in the middle of an exciting conversation with Yuskani Jimenez-Deval on the use of computational methods. If you're wondering how you can use these methods to describe, to control, and optimize bioprocesses, go back to part one of our discussion. Make sure to tune in. In part two, Yuskani will focus on how we can use them in a step-by-step process and how you can make the best use of your data sets, extracting the most information out of your data sets. So stay tuned for the second part of our interview with Yuskani Jimenez-Deval, who is an assistant professor at the School of Chemical and Bioprocess Engineering at the University College in Dublin. He leads there the Animal Cell Technology Group and works on integrating computational modeling with advanced experimentation to optimize the production of biopharmaceutical. So stay tuned for part two of our conversation. Are you juggling the complexities of CMC development while trying to enjoy the beauty of biotech? Have you ever wondered if there's a way to simplify bioprocessing? Welcome to the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast, where we're diving headfirst into the very challenges you face. We're breaking it down, demystifying the jargon, and giving you the keys to unlock your full potential. I'm your host, David Brohlman, and I get it. With 15 plus years in the biotech industry, I face the same challenges you do. There's a way to simplify and streamline so you can remove complexity, you can skip trials and errors, deliver without delay your groundbreaking therapy to clinics and market, and still enjoy every single step. Do you want to learn how industry experts and I did it? Grab a cup of coffee and your favorite notebook and pen. Now is the time to take your bioprocessing game to the next level. Let's smarten up biotech. Let's get practical, Yuskani. How can we as scientists optimize and control process in the best manner? Can you break it down into a few simple steps?
First thing we ideally want to do is understand the system, those input-output relationships, but again, across time, extracting as much information as we have from the data that we have, both qualitatively and quantitatively. Data processing, which I was just discussing a moment ago, to extract the maximum amount of information. Once the input-output relationships are understood, both from the qualitative and quantitative perspective, how confident are we in those input-output relationships? Again, very quality by design, we can start framing confidence space of model robustness. That should overlay to an extent with the design space for the process. Once you know where your model is going to perform and how that overlays with your design space, then you can deploy it. You know, standard numerical optimization strategies, I would say. And I know that was very, very high level, but I guess the key thing that I want to emphasize is that these very, very aligned quality by design principles of understanding quantitatively, mechanistically, ideally, not always the case whenever you need these data-driven approaches to understand certain aspects, certain details. But once you understand those, you understand the inherent variabilities, you perform risk assessments or risk analysis, then you know you can deploy the model and you know the confidence you'll have in model outputs in terms of optimization. So I guess, I know, again, very high level, but that's the way that I view it, let's say.
So what I'm hearing is going to comes down to having a systematic way, so using quality by design guidelines, and also very importantly, gaining or acquiring the process knowledge, the process understanding.
Absolutely. And again, qualitatively and quantitatively. Now, it's not necessarily following the quality by design guidelines, but the general kind of architecture of them, just applying them towards model development and deployment.
Excellent. So now a question I have for you, Skani, is where is the fine line between modeling and doing experimental work? Because there's probably a sweet spot somewhere. Where do you see it? What is realistic and how many experiments should we run?
If a company is starting with a modeling program from zero, then the amount of data that's going to be required up front might be considerable. But then based on some of these more recent findings of transferability of processes, you start building understanding that is common across different products and processes. I would argue a critical mass of data after which only the details have to be sussed out. So that would be an inflection point in terms of how much data is required or not. I think, and this actually I didn't mention earlier in terms of avenues moving forward, but I think it's important to mention here, there are strategies from more traditional or process systems engineering, such as design of optimally informative experiments. So in this case, it's the other way around. You use your models. These are dynamic processes that change over time. And the overall idea is you can use your computational models as long as you're confident in their robustness, the robustness of their structure, really. And you can use them to design optimally informative experiments. Use the model to design experiments that contain as much understanding of the process as possible, and you run those experiments. Now, the key thing is you can save some money there because it doesn't have to be separate experiments. You can run them dynamically different. That's the key advantage, and that's the beauty of having time-dependent processes. So, say if you're running a perfusion reactor, you can set different set points, right, for CSPR dynamically across a given period of time, and the transition between one steady state and the next. That's where the real understanding may come from. And that's very different, and it's more information rich, or it would be more information rich, than if you just went, let's run this perfusion process for 40 days at these conditions, use that to populate or to construct a model, and then run another one and then run another one in parallel. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for highlighting that.
So in general, I think models can be used to design experiments that are optimally informative, that have the most amount of information that we can extract from.
It comes down to the question we tackled earlier. How can you extract the maximum amount of information of your data set, right?
Of course. Now, in this case, it's just flipping it around. So if you already know that the structure of your model is good, you already have a decent idea of what information is most relevant to quantitatively describe a process. That's what your model side is contributing. You sort of inherently already know that it's significant and how you can prepare experiments to extract as much of that information as possible. Again, quantitatively is the key aspect here.
And what is the main pitfall to watch out for?
Robustness, I'd say. In companies, I'd say if you have a modeling program or you're deploying models for a given process, it can be demanding in terms of the amount of data that might be required. I think there wasn't as much of an interest in computational models in the processes because it didn't seem like there was too much at the industrial level. And we finally reached a point where the value is being observed and seen and appreciated. And, you know, that's a good place to be, especially as an academic that does that does this. So I think one of the things that I'd be concerned about from that perspective is if we go and collaborate with companies and then ask them to create vast, vast data sets, it might put them off again. And so I think we have to be very, very clever in balancing. And again, that's why the questions that you asked about balance and sweet spot particularly relevant. We want to make sure that we add value to these model development programs without requiring too much additional information. And again, it's just getting the ball rolling or continuing to roll the ball, actually, because we're already at that stage. Because I truly believe that the more experience companies have on developing these models, there's going to be more transferability of knowledge and expertise from one product process to the next. And that'll just simply streamline and reduce data requirement. In terms of pitfalls, yeah, we don't want to ask for it be inconvenient to just ask for too much data. Blindly trusting model outputs, that's not necessarily a risky thing at this stage, but it might be worth mentioning. And the key thing, there's always, I guess, questions about this from the machine learning aspect. Because all these machine learning algorithms, they can't be reproduced. So the way in which they're structured, the outputs, you know, they're very, very robust depending on whether it's done properly. But the way in which they're constructed gets updated all the time. And if you feed the same data into one of these algorithms, the structure of the, say, the neural net is going to be different, and the way in which it arrives to that point is going to be different every single time. Trusting those types of very new tech deployment in this context, trusting those aspects that are particularly sort of uncertain in terms of how they actually function, blind is something to keep an eye out for. But again, with all the fantastic work that's being done, both in industry and academia, I think we're moving ahead and we're hedging that risk, but it's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it's good news for us scientists as well, because we still need critical thinking. We still need process understanding. We still need the scientists, I mean, to understand the models and to make the best use out of these models, right?
Yeah, I think that's the question mark that I always have on, say, the neural nets and so on. We use them to describe things that we can't really understand perfectly, but at the same time, how they're generated and built, we don't, like, it's inherently diverse, let's say. We can't concretely, very, very distinctly understand how absolute mechanisms, how they work either. So again, if you can't understand it, it's a bit of a black box, then in my view, and this is probably just because of academic background and so on, the black box, how much can you trust the black box? As much as you need, but not more, let's say.
Yes, Scotty, what is the number one thing you want us to take away from our conversation?
I think it's already implicit in how the conversation's gone, but I think computational models can and have and will continue adding value to the biopharma sector. There's a broad diversity of computational models that are out there that can be used in very, very different ways. We focused a lot more on the, say, kinetic ones here, but the flux balance, but the metabolic models, those kinds of things can be used to engineer your cells. There's a diversity. It's like a new toolbox that's growing and that's being made available. And I think it's all about, as you said, figuring out what the best way, how we best can use it so that everybody gains, so that it generates value for everybody, from patients to companies to academics to consultants and so on and so forth. I think that's, in a few words, my key takeaways.
Where can people connect with you, Scotty?
So Twitter, LinkedIn, and even via email. I try to make myself available for any questions, because at this stage it might be obvious, but I'm a bit of a nerd, so I love chatting about these things. So yeah, social media or directly via email.
I will leave all the information in the show notes. You can reach out to Scotty, and I'm looking forward to these discussions and collaborations and insights. So thank you once again, Scotty, for being on the show and dropping so many value bombs, providing your thoughts. It has been a real pleasure having this discussion with you.
Thanks very much, David. It was fantastic to be here. I think this is a great, great resource for people just to kind of access to listen to. So I think it's fantastic work, David, and I think it's very, very valuable for the community. So thanks very much for having me.
All right, smart scientists. That's all for today on the Smart Biotech Scientist podcast. Thank you for tuning in and joining us on your journey to bioprocess mastery. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. By doing so, we can empower more scientists like you. For additional bioprocessing tips, visit us at smartbiotechscientist.com. Stay tuned for more inspiring biotech insights in our next episode. Until then, let's continue to smarten up biotech.